Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 169th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers at soccernewsday.com, and you can also listen to this program on mtrradio.com. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the chat room is open. Come on in, discuss whatever you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability. And, of course, you can talk amongst yourselves if you like to have a little get-together. You know, ladies and gentlemen, MLS Cup playoffs are already underway. We've already gone through the first four, six games that have happened. We've already been through the wild card round, first leg of the conference semifinals, of the MLS Cup quarterfinals. And before we even talk about that, let's get into it right now. The television play-by-play announcer, Mr. Dan Kelly, the Chicago Fire on My 50 in the Chicago area. As everyone knows, Frank Klopas is no longer with the club. Frank Yallop has come in, and let's hear it right now from Mr. Dan Kelly, the television play-by-play voice of the Chicago Fire.
Joined now, probably one of the most famous broadcasting families in the entire professional sports world. Of course, I'm joined by Dan Kelly, the head TV play-by-play announcer for the Chicago Fire, the famous Daniel Kelly family. Of course, as John also does the St. Louis Blues and formerly the Colorado Avalanche. Dan, thank you so much for being on with me.
Hey, Danielle, it's great to talk with you and great to still be talking soccer. Of course, it's a long season, so it always seems to be time to talk MLS.
Absolutely. Of course, the big thing is Frank Klopas out at the Chicago Fire, but bringing in Frank Yallop, and I think everyone knows, not to say that Frank was a bad choice, but obviously when you've got someone like a Frank Yallop available to come over to Chicago, I think that would enhance the roster that you have right now going into next year.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I applaud ownership, you know, headed by Andrew Hoffman. Don't always have the best light shine towards them, but I applaud them especially because I like this decision was made quickly. It didn't fester. It didn't happen in January. It gives Frank Yallop a chance who's, you know, going to make big changes to his staff and probably make some, you know, major alterations to this team to give him time. So I think that's a big positive step, and as you mentioned, experience, because that's something the last couple of hires, you know, Frank was an experienced guy, meaning Klopas, but in terms of head coaching experience at the Major League Soccer level or even as an assistant, he had zero. So that's a big step in the right direction and having an experienced guy like Frank Yallop with a proven track record. So I think, you know, good days for the Chicago Fire coming.
Absolutely. Even though there were rumors saying that he might have signed with Vancouver after Martin Rennie was sent away there, and apparently Halpman got lucky and just got Frank Yallop to come on over. What do you think will be the differences between what Klopas has done for the last several years and what Yallop could do starting in the 2014 season?
Well, I mean, I think that's a good question. Is you know, one, I think they got Frank Yallop because they showed him the money. And, you know, and of course there was rumors because of the Canadian ties and family in British Columbia. So that was nice that they showed the commitment to him and also showed the commitment long-term to him to give him a chance. But it just when being there at the press conference when he was introduced, I think, you know, and also watching fan reaction from Twitter, is some people, you know, there's a rivalry. It's, you know, the San Jose and Chicago Fire. And, I mean, San Jose at times, Stephen Lenhardt and company aren't always the most beloved team. So I think there was a fear from Fire fans is, are we going to have, you know, San Jose part two? And Frank Yallop was pretty clear at the press conference that, you know, you play and coach according to the team that you have presented. So that's not necessarily his way. That's the team he had in San Jose. And don't expect him to play the same way here in Chicago. It's, of course, you know, the style of play is accordance with what team you have. So I think it's going to be a little different in Chicago, and I think that's good news to Chicago Fire fans.
Why was the beginning of the season such a problem? Because I thought the bringing over Jeff Laurentiewicz, of course bringing over Joel Impair from the Red Bulls after they let him go for 3 years, I thought the midfield improved a lot. I thought the Fire was going to be, I gave them the preseason pick of winning the Eastern Conference this year, and unfortunately it didn't happen.
Yeah, no, it took a little while for Jeff Laurentiewicz, and he mentioned it, to fit in both personally and professionally on the field. But, you know, I mean, I think that's where you have to kind of, you start to look at the coach sometimes when talent like that doesn't, it just doesn't come together. I mean, of course, you're patient, but to a degree, not after that horrendous start, just two wins in their first 10 games. So, I mean, that was cause for concern. I think the big difference, though, too, is, you know, where this team would be and without Mike McGee coming in late May. And the big difference was the first couple months of the season, you had Sergio McDonald missing chances, and that was your go-to guy in terms of finishing, and he wasn't finishing. And as soon as Mike McGee came on and they just had that goal or two a game, that was the difference all of a sudden with the Fire, that they could eke out wins or draws.
Absolutely. Mike McGee was the big savior of the season. And not just a big savior, but a local guy, too, from Chicago, just from outside of Chicago. Mike McGee always wanted to come back home, and now he finally got his wish, and definitely a big part of possibly a spectacular 2014 season for the Fire if things go right with Frank Yallop. What are the differences you're going to see, I believe, with Klopas and Yallop? What are the goods and what are the bads of it?
Well, I think one thing that, you know, you can point to experience, but especially we saw it last year, and you know, Frank's options this year were limited, and McGee was the go-to guy. But at times, I think you could say that Frank Klopas wasn't imaginative enough in terms of when he had a Sebastian Grazzini and Dominic Odero, and then they had to change their game plan with the departure of Sebastian Grazzini last year, you know, trying to use Dominic Odero as an isolated striker, and there just wasn't a chance of him, you know, winning aerial balls and playing that direct approach and not being able to change on the fly. I think that's where the difference is going to be with an experienced guy like Frank Yallop that's, you know, been at the helm of different teams at different times and different personnel as this league has evolved. And also, you can't say enough about experience and knowing the league. And, you know, his 6 months away, he didn't lose any knowledge about Major League Soccer and the players and personnel and his contacts around the world. So I think that's going to be the big thing, is having that imagination and the ability to play a couple different ways.
Of course, I cover the New York Red Bulls locally here in the New York City, New Jersey area. You're over in Chicago. We met at Red Bull Arena. Whenever the Fire and the Red Bulls come together, this has always been a hotly contested match, whether it be at Toyota Field or at Red Bull Arena. I never thought I would see 5 goals scored on Chicago. I mean, to me, it was an aberration probably, but through all the tough battles these two sides have faced since 1998, I've never seen Chicago get 5 past them. It was just unbelievable. I know it's the end of the season, but were you surprised, too, to see this?
Yeah, you know, and it's a good point. And that's with the world-class keeper and Sean Johnson, too, who, you know, I mean, when Henri starts picking him off the post, he's kind of left off the island. So I don't point fingers at him. But, you know, I mean, that was, yes, surprise, but, you know, when the Fire pushed it, you know, they're going for it, and they're going to leave themselves vulnerable. But I guess we shouldn't be too surprised either, because that was the weakness for the Fire, even in their good times. You know, dropping points at the end of the season to Montreal and Houston, where they had the opportunity to pick off 3 points, or on the road against TFC, is their ability to defend. And that's something that's going to need to improve, because, it's, you know, especially with the addition of Mike McGee, the offense wasn't the problem at the end of the season. It was, you know, it was the ability to defend. And we saw that, you know, demonstrated against New York, unfortunately, in the final match.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about you, obviously, the famous Kelly family, your father, originally from Canada, the National Hockey League announcer, of course, covering the St. Louis Blues back in the day. I remember you starting off with the Columbus Blue Jackets when they came into the NHL 5, 7, 10 years ago. and then you moved on to running the Blackhawks play-by-play booth, and now you're doing soccer with the Fire. Just for the audience, you're enjoying the soccer, and what are the differences calling hockey and soccer for you?
Yeah, well, you know, I caught the bug, I guess, during the 2006 World Cup. Glenn Davis was working the World Cup, so at the time I was calling NHL games for HDNet, and I got a chance to do a few MLS games. And, you know, now just fully catching the bug from men's soccer and women's college soccer, you know, Major League Soccer. I see why it's a beautiful game and why people are in love with it. I just wish I had the opportunity more to play it at a higher level, you know, throughout my life, because it's incredible. I guess to compare and contrast it to hockey is the reason I enjoy calling it better than hockey and watching it better than hockey is because of the bigger field and more players, or it seems like more players necessarily, but you don't have the line changes, but the bigger field and set pieces, there's more options and there's more things that could potentially happen. Sometimes hockey becomes too predictable when you drive the puck in and dump it in. Soccer, one thing you can't accuse it of is being predictable. And the same thing that's beautiful about hockey you also see in soccer is, you know, sometimes people complain about soccer being slow. Well, you know, it has its moments, but, of course, remember, we don't go to break four times a period like a lot of other sports, and that's at the minimum. But those moments around the goal, when it's hitting the goalpost or the crossbar or second ball, just complete chaos. So that's, to me, where the similarities in hockey and soccer that are strikingly beautiful together.
And how long have you been with Kevin Egan, your analyst for Chicago Fire games? Like the same time, or you're ahead of him by a year?
Yeah, no, this is my second year with Kevin. Previously, as Fire defender, Evan Whitfield, for a couple of seasons. But I had a chance to also spend some time in the college soccer booth with Kevin Egan even before he came on with the Fire. So it's nice to work with him. And he, you know, he brings a young voice, but also brings a global perspective that is pretty unique and is real.
Oh, absolutely. And every time I get a chance to go to the MLS website for highlights, I love how you and Kevin call the games, especially the Open Cup semifinal, even though Chicago lost, unfortunately, to DC United 2-0. Still, it was wonderful to hear your voice, and at the same time, it was wonderful to hear Kevin doing the match. Listen, Dan, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the off season, and we'll see what Chicago Fire can do in 2014.
Hey, Dan, no, my pleasure. It's great catching up with you. Good luck to you, and hope to see you down the road, sir.
All right, thank you, sir.
And that's Dan Kelly, the play-by-play voice of the Chicago Fire on My 50 in Chicago. Was very gracious, fun time to meet him at Red Bull Arena in the final game of the regular season. Him and Kevin Egan, they do a fantastic job calling Chicago Fire matches. If you have MLS Live and you can catch it either on your computer or on your cable box or Dish Network, DirecTV, if you want to listen to a Chicago Fire game, go ahead, listen to them. And, you know, Frank Yallop, right place at the right time. Frank Klopas did his best. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough, and the switch was made, and a big coup, because it sounded like Frank Yallop might have signed with the Whitecaps, and it did not happen. He comes to Chicago, and now we're going to see what he's going to do on the East Coast on a regular basis, because this is going to be a little bit different than facing West Coast teams majority of your schedule. But this is the 169th edition of the 40 Seats Fire Internet Soccer Show. Reviewing now first leg matches of the MLS Cup quarterfinals and the MLS Cup playoffs. Here, it's going to be a great, great time. You're going to love it, and hopefully everything will be fine. Joining me, of course, will be Adam Serrano, the LA Galaxy insider, talking about the Galaxy's 1-0 victory over Real Salt Lake. And then, of course, we're going to have on Stephen Leonard, the 5 minutes to kickoff blog, podcast as well, on the Portland Timbers victory at the Seattle Sounders. Of course, we'll finish off the fall season in the NESL segment, and then we're going to talk about the Red Bulls 2-2 draw down in Houston. But he couldn't come on live either, but that's okay. Don't mind it. Mr. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today talking about that big first leg win at Gillette Stadium against Sporting Kansas City. And boy, oh boy, if you didn't think that was going to be big, you got another thing coming, my friends. But I'll tell you, it's going to be an interesting playoff, interesting playoffs going on. So once again, here is the taped conversation with Mr. Sean Donahue, Mr. Sean Donahue, the creator and top editor of NewEnglandSoccerToday.com.
And this is Daniel Feuerstein here on the Feuerstein's Fire Net Soccer Show. Joining me, of course, after that first leg win over Sporting Kansas City, it's Mr. Sean Donahue from the New England Soccer Today site. Sean, thanks for your time.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Now, obviously, Sporting Kansas City and the New York Red Bulls, they were fighting for that Supporters Shield spot as well as the top dog in the Eastern Conference. And you come out against Sporting Kansas City, the Revolution do, with a 2-1 advantage in the first leg. Set the scene for us, and how did you feel the Revolution actually played in this match?
Well, I mean, it was a very interesting game, certainly a tale of two halves. You watched the first half, and it looked like a game that was going to be 0-0. It was interesting, you know, from the beginning of the match, it seemed like the turf was playing even worse than usual, which is saying something. I know UMass had played a game on there earlier. I don't know if that, you know, mad down the field or whatever, but the ball was just bouncing crazily. You know, the teams couldn't string two passes together. It looked like it was going to be an awful 0-0 game. And, you know, at that point, I think some people would have been happy just to see the Reds get out of there with a draw, and Kansas City had the better of the play in the first half, as bad as that was for both teams. But, you know, the Reds came out in the second half. They got that goal from Andy Dorman in the 55th minute. You know, a little bit of luck involved there, but, you know, a great goal for them to open the scoring. And then Kellen Rowe scored a fantastic goal in the 67th minute to put them up 2-0. You know, unfortunately, they gave that right back with some, you know, not the greatest defending on a set piece, but, you know, I certainly think on the balance of play, the Revolution would be very happy to be leaving that game. You know, 2-1 win with a goal advantage going into Kansas City. I mean, you know, you talk about them getting outperformed in the first half, but if you look at the second half, the Revolution only had 30% possession. They completed 53% of their passes, which is just an atrocious number. I don't think you're going to find a team scoring two goals in a half, completing 53% of their passes very often. But, you know, going out of that game, a 1-0 victory, I think, is a big thing for the Revolution. They go into Kansas City, you know, knowing a draw can see them through. I think playing for a draw would be a bad mistake, but, you know, like I said, based on this game, I don't think they can be disappointed with a one-goal win.
Now, talk about the Andy Dorman goal, because obviously there's a lot of controversy with that particular goal. Some were feeling that even though the shot was onside, Dorman came from an offside position to play the rebound, and I looked at that replay. I'll be honest, it looks kind of tough because even though the shot was on, I think he was onside when the shot was taken, and he had every right to go for the rebound. What was your opinion on that one?
Yeah, I mean, seeing it live, it was very hard to tell. I think I certainly had questions of offside when I first saw it, but, you know, watching the replay, seeing the screen grabs that, you know, MLS Soccer has put up now, I mean, it appears that it was onside. I think it was a very difficult call to make. I don't know how the referee could have, you know, seen it well enough to really be sure one way or another. I think the linesman was, you know, a few yards behind the play, and it was, you know, as it was a very difficult call to make. But, you know, I think they got it right. It definitely was a very difficult one, close either way, but I see why Vermees thought it was offside before he saw the replay, because it certainly, you know, had hints of it, but the more I see it, the more I think it was onside.
Yeah, I thought it was onside myself. I really thought that the original shot was sent, that Dorman was definitely onside. He was just in perfect position to get the rebound and convert it. Rowe has been fantastic for New England, just as Lee Wen's been fantastic for New England. It just seems to me that these are the two guys that, along with Sire Sen and Jerry Benson, that these are starting – you're seeing the core players for the Revolution coming through now with Jay Heaps as your manager. Can you agree with that, disagree with that, with what's going on for the future for the Revolution?
Well, I think that Aguadelo has been huge coming in, certainly. But Lee Wen and Kellen Rowe have been very big this year. Rowe especially, last year I think he was a little bit of a disappointment. They played him out on the wing a lot, and I don't think he was that comfortable there. You know, he came into the league as a central midfielder. The Revolution had needs in the wing. They thought he could play there. I don't think that worked that well. This year they put him in the center, and he just seems like a completely different player, much more confident on the ball, taking some great long shots, scoring some fantastic goals. Just seems like a completely different player between last year and this year, and I think that's really changed the team. Lee Wen also has moved centrally, kind of played more of a deeper role. I think it took him a little bit of time to adjust to that role, but, you know, towards the end of the season it's been fantastic. You know, certainly down this 7-game unbeaten run that they're on, it's been an amazing form. I think Bankston, who's seen some time for the team, has actually been a disappointment. He's done so much for the Honduras national team, but he, you know, hasn't scored a goal for the Revolution in several months now. And, you know, really, if everyone's healthy, he doesn't see much playing time. Sire Sen, I think the fact that they managed to overcome from the broken leg that he had or the injury that he had has been big for the team, too. I think that's been kind of a little bit of a weakness, actually, with Mbongo filling in for him and pushing Iguodala to the wing. I don't know if that's the ideal situation for them, but you know, you can't argue too much with what they're doing because it's been working.
Absolutely, it has been working. And talking about in net, I mean, obviously Shuttleworth is probably going to be the future for the club unless they're going to go somewhere else, because what's it like seeing Matt Rhys? I mean, obviously it seems to me that he's retaken the starting keeper spot and he's done very good down the stretch, but is this going to be into next year as well, or do you think Shuttleworth will reclaim the number one spot?
I mean, it's hard to know how much longer Rhys wants to keep playing, but the way he's playing right now, I think the starting spot is definitely his for next year, if assuming he wants to keep playing. His stats this year have been phenomenal. I mean, they haven't lost a game where he's gone 90 minutes. The only game they've lost that he started was that one where he was ejected in the fifth minute against Montreal. Otherwise, they're unbeaten. It's the longest streak for any goalkeeper in the history of MLS to have gone through a season unbeaten. So that's pretty impressive for him, and I think his goals against average is 0.74. Fantastic year for him. And for a while, it looked like it was going to be Bobby Shuttleworth as the starter all year. So quite the revival down the stretch, and I think he's really been the key, one of the keys to why they did so well going down the stretch and were able to kind of sneak into that third seed.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's it like to facing this Kansas City side that's really been strong on the back line, a great keeper in Jimmy Nielsen. They've got some trickery up front with Bunbury, as well as Sapong and Dom Dwyer coming off the bench. I mean, you have to say that even though you do lead the aggregate 2-1, maybe you feel that there's been some relief here, that they didn't go firing on all cylinders?
Yeah, I think if you look at the way Kansas City has played the Revolution this year and last year, they seem to be a team that really knows how to play the Revolution. If you look at the weaknesses for this team, for New England, it's their set pieces. They really are not strong on set pieces. Defending set pieces, they haven't been the greatest. They improved a little bit this year, but offensively on set pieces, they're just among the worst in the league. Chris Tierney being out makes it even worse. He is not the most consistent guy, but he's been their biggest threat in set pieces. Without him, they don't really have any threats there. So what Kansas City has been able to do over the years is really foul the Revolution anytime they get into a dangerous spot near the box. And key tactical fouls give the Revolution a free kick that they haven't been able to convert. And that has really been how they've shut down the Revolution. Going into this game, the Revolution were 501 minutes without a goal against Kansas City. So that tells you what Kansas City has done in the past. And I think that also tells you why people were so excited the Revolution were able to score two goals in this game and get away with a lead. But I don't think anyone's confident in the Revolution going to Kansas City and getting a draw or getting a win, because over the years, Kansas City really, as I said, show they can beat this team, show they can shut them down. The good thing for the Revolution is their defense has been great, especially when Matt Rhys has been in goal. Gonsalves has been arguably the MLS Defender of the Year. With him back there, with Rhys back there, I think the Revolution's best chance there to keep Kansas City shut out, because the odds of the Revolution putting in another 2-0 performance against Kansas City, I think, are pretty slim based on what we've seen over the years.
Diego Fagundes, he's looking to be a top-notch player for the Revolution. I mean, I don't know if they'll ever decide to transfer out of MLS, but what have you seen from him in his first playoff game, that what you liked and also what you didn't like?
I think the thing with Fagundes, particularly going against Kansas City, it's the matchup that doesn't favor him. They're a very physical defense, and I think that's not his strong point. He's still a very small guy. At 18, I don't know if he's done drawing or not, but I don't think that's a favorable matchup for him. I think he can get lost in a game like that. I think when he was in the ball, you saw some positive things from him, but overall, during the regular season when the Revolution played Kansas City the last time, Jay Heaps actually kept him on the bench for most of the game because that matchup was so poor for his style. But I think in this game, you have to play him. He was MVP this year. With Sire sent out, they don't have that many options. But I don't think you're going to see the most out of Diego Fagundes in this series. And I think in the first leg, he didn't have that much of an impact. And I think we'll probably see the same thing in the second leg. Unless he gets some space to maneuver in, this is a Kansas City team that's very capable of keeping him quiet.
I want to get off the Revolution for a little bit, obviously. I don't know if you've seen articles on the Internet. There is an article out there on Soccer Newsday of the disappointment that places like Gillette Stadium, CenturyLink Field, even BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston had NFL grid lines on the field. I know the Patriots had a home game that Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but if I can ask you this, and I know it's not, you know, what you'd like to see with the Revolution playing a playoff game, but how disappointed were you that those grid lines were still on the field for a Revolution soccer playoff match?
I mean, I think it's very disappointing. And you know, what made it even worse was the fact that there was that UMass football game at noon, so, you know, there really wasn't time to paint the lines after the Revolution game, for the Patriots game, or anything like that, because they already had to have them on there for the game right before. So it was really an awful situation. I'm not really sure what they could have done about it. I think everyone would like to see the Revolution get a soccer-specific stadium somewhere in the city. How far away that is, or if that will happen, you know, anytime soon is anybody's guess. There's always been talk about it, but you know, for right now, I'm not really sure what other option they had. And you know, it was an unfortunate event to see that. You know, what else is unfortunate is the fact that, you know, the Revolution have their second leg of this playoff series coming up on Wednesday, and right now it's scheduled to be on the Comcast Sports doing an alternative channel, which not many people get. So that's another disappointing thing, that because there's a Celtics game at the same time, this Revolution playoff game is, you know, probably not going to be able to be seen by many people unless NBC Sports picks it up at the last minute like they did with the first leg.
I hate to tell you this. It's going to be Wednesday Night Rivals on the NBC Sports Network, Penguins-Rangers. So good luck with that, because it's not going to happen. I'm sorry. I'm in the same, you know, we're in the same boat too.
Well, it's disappointing, especially seeing, you know, the Celtics being the 0-3 team right now, who, you know, kind of tanking it this year, getting a preference over the Revolution for, you know, a playoff game. I guess you can't be too surprised, but which one is going to make for the better viewing? I think it would probably be the playoff match.
Absolutely. I'm not going to disagree with you there. Finally, second leg, Revolution up a goal in the aggregate. You're heading over to Sporting Park in Kansas City, Kansas. Do you think Jay Heaps needs to switch it up a little bit, change the way the Revolution have been playing in the first leg, or do you think you just stick with the same game plan against Kansas City in their building?
I think that what's going to change this game, first of all, is being off of the horrible Gillette turf from the way that played in the last game. I think that'll make a difference. But I think the key here is that Jay Heaps does not go out this too defensively. If they try to defend for 90 minutes, they will lose. I think there's no question there. They need to find a way to be smart about when they attack. But I think the formation they play is the one change that I would consider making is what you saw happen in the second half with Scott Caldwell coming on for Dimitri Mbongo. And when they make that move, they become a more solid team defensively. I think they become a better passing team with Caldwell on the field. I think you can do that. And what they did then was push Kellen Rowe wide, which I don't think is ideal. But I think if you push Lee Wynn wide, which is where he played last year and was the team's MVP in that position, you know, I think that's something that you might want to work with. But you know, at this point, they've gone on this, you know, seven-game unbeaten run, playing largely the same lineup. I don't see him making many changes. I think just the key here is that, you know, they treat this game, and I think they talked about that, they're going to treat this game, you know, like it's a tie game rather than them having the lead. And I think that's what they need to do. If they defend for 90 minutes, it's going to get ugly real fast. This Kansas City team has a lot of attacking threats. They're very capable of shutting down the Revolution if the Revolution don't put numbers forward. So it's going to be a tough match for the Revolution. I think they have enough to sneak out of there with a draw, but I don't think anyone's too confident. I certainly don't think Jay Heaps is very confident that they can just go in there and get a draw. I think he's going to try to play for the win. So it'll be a very interesting second leg.
It really should be. That's Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. He is the creator, editor, and the top correspondent of his own website. Sean, thanks for the time. Good luck in the second leg.
Thanks a lot for having me on. Good luck to the Red Bulls as well.
Thank you.
Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today talking about that first leg review. I thought it was interesting to see the Revolution get ahead there and going up 2-1. Obviously, it's a favorable result to New England, even though Kansas City did pull one back. It saves them from actually trying to climb out of a deep hole. And to see how Kansas City answered after going down 2-0 to see Aurelian Collin answer right back and very quickly. I thought it was a very big answer for the Sporting Kansas City, and they had to do what they had to do. So right there and then, it was a big, big answer for Kansas City as they go ahead and try to move forward as the second leg will come on this Wednesday night, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, as the Sporting Kansas City hosts the New England Revolution at Sporting Park. A draw would probably put New England into the Eastern Conference Final, the MLS Cup playoffs semifinals against either the Red Bulls or the Houston Dynamo. And, of course, as we move now into the Western Conference, the Los Angeles Galaxy hosting Real Salt Lake at the StubHub Center, and all it was needed was one goal, and that one goal, great, great strike from Sarvis. And joining me now to talk about that match is, of course, the LA Galaxy insider, Adam Serrano. And Adam, I have to say that this was a very entertaining match, grinding out match. Both sides were giving it to each other in the first half until the start of the second half came when the goal was scored by the Galaxy.
Yeah, you know, it was a very exciting match with the Galaxy. We're in control for a great deal because, you know, RSL came out pretty defensively, which is something that I don't know if we really anticipated, but we knew that it was probably likely that they would be able to do such a thing. But, you know, the Galaxy were plugging away, and they just couldn't find the back of the net, which was pretty frustrating for them. So when they were able to break through, you had a fantastic strike from Sean Franklin, just a merciless.
Sean Franklin.
Merciless bomb. You know, it was fantastic, and that really put the Galaxy up for good.
I have to say, though, after he struck it in just a little bit in the air, I just said to myself, oh, this is going in, and it does hit the back of the net, and what a screamer, absolutely. I mean, Sean Franklin, growing up in the Galaxy's youth academy, one of those top players that Bruce Arena looked towards for the future of this club, just like Jose Villarreal. I mean, once again, Sean Franklin, just an absolute bomb from distance. Probably, what, 25 yards?
Yeah, I think they measured it finally at 31 yards.
Ooh, 31. That's even deadlier. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, man.
Yeah,
obviously, this is the – oh, it was absolutely great. Obviously, this is the first playoff rounds for the Galaxy without David Beckham. And I would have to ask you this question. Even though Beckham is officially retired playing football, is there any form of a difference with the club without Beckham now? I mean, we know Robbie Keane is there, Landon Donovan is there, Juninho always helps out in the midfield, but is there a different feeling with this midfield now that Beckham has officially retired from football?
Yeah, you know, I think that they're a totally different style of team. You know, you look at a guy like Marcelo Sarvas, and he's kind of taken over for David Beckham and really picked up where he left off. And I think that, you know, David Beckham is one of the greatest players to ever play the game, one of the most famous players to ever play the game, and so you're never going to fully replace him. But with Marcelo Sarvas, they've created a real connection between him and Juninho, which has caused a lot of help. You know, they've kind of developed from a long ball-oriented system under Beckham to kind of a short passing game a la, you know, maybe a RSL Sporting Kansas City kind of look with Marcelo and Juninho. So he's really stepped up there. Another aspect is corner kicks. You know, corners have kind of changed. You have a guy like David Beckham whipping in the ball, so they've had to kind of alter their strategy a little bit and do things a little bit more differently. But, you know, I think it's a team that knows Beckham is gone, he's not coming back, and they're not waiting for him around. They're going to move forward.
Absolutely. But you figured, you know, the way that Bruce Arena and Jason Christ, they always fight, you know, tooth and nail in these Western Conference matchups. You had to think that Bruce Arena had to maybe try a little something different to try and knocked down Jason Kreis a little bit. I got to tell you, though, great matchup again. And how, once again, Bruce Arena versus Jason Kreis, it just doesn't get any better than that in the MLS Cup playoffs.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. You know, these two guys know how to deal with one another. These two teams want to play the game. They want to have a real soccer match. You know, that's something that's rare. You don't usually see that in the postseason. And I think that it makes it more exciting just for teams, for players, because you see people doing things the right way. And that's something that you might lose sometimes in the, you know, pragmatic nature of the playoffs.
Absolutely. You know, the LA Galaxy, they're in this position again, like kind of like last year. They weren't in the top two or three, I believe. They're kind of like in the, maybe the third down to the – no, that's right. They were in the wild card game last year against Vancouver. So a little higher than normal. You didn't have the extra game, but how confident are you that the Galaxy can try and make it three in a row to MLS Cup? Because I just feel like the Galaxy has the magic to get back to where they want to be.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. It's not about magic. It's about talent. And this is a team that is as talented as any other team in the league, if not more so. They have such classy players from Landon Donovan, Juninho, Marcelo Farias, Robbie Keane, Omar Gonzalez. You know, the list goes on. Jaime Pinedo. This is a talented team. And if you were going to start any team in the league, no matter who you're a fan of, you'd have to look at LA first as the players you'd want to grab. So I think that that is always going to put them ahead. You know, they have the coaching strength of Bruce Arena. That's something that's going to push them forward. And I think confident that they can not only get a result in Sandy to move them forward, but that they can really complete their quest for three and win that third straight championship, something that's never been done before in MLS.
Absolutely. If I can ask this question, obviously it's already been done, but what was the reason? I mean, we know you got Jaime Pineda now to man the nets for the Galaxy, and Carlo Cudicini did not work. Was it because he just wasn't used to MLS, or maybe he just got too old?
Yeah, you know, Carlo Cudicini just simply wasn't working out. I think that he had struggled at times in certain aspects of the game. You know, a common critique from him was just his ability just to come off the line. You know, he was certainly a fine goalkeeper in his day, but I think those days had kind of moved past. He'd kind of moved past those. But you have a guy in Jaime Pinedo who's just a star, who's just absolutely class. He's able to come off his line. He shows confidence. He shows an ability to bounce back. I mean, he had the heartbreaker of all heartbreakers with what happened to Panama in the World Cup qualifying, and he stepped right back up, got back with the Galaxy, shook that off, which is probably the biggest professional disappointment of his entire life, and got the Galaxy to a victory, and which is something that you might not see from a lot of players. So I think that he's a guy who's just his head and shoulders above what the Galaxy have right now, and I think kind of fills in those deficiencies that we saw earlier in the season from a guy like Cudicini.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you have a you feel bad a little bit for Jaime Pineda, obviously, for Panama. National team did not qualify for the World Cup. At the same time, didn't even get to the playoff games against New Zealand. But he is a quality keeper, and, you know, we've seen him through the years, whether it's CONCACAF World Cup qualifying for Panama or if it's Gold Cup tournaments for Panama. You got yourself a pretty damn good goalie over there. And, you know, many people are hoping for the New York-LA matchup. I had Kyle Martino on from NBC Sports Network. Even he said he wants to see a New York-LA final. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that is the marquee matchup that we all want to see. That's what we want to see in all sports. We want to see Yankees, Dodgers. We want to see Knicks versus Lakers. We want to see the Rangers play the Kings. We want to see the Galaxy play the Red Bulls. I think it's just natural. You have that natural kind of rivalry, the big markets going up against one another. But I think that we're still a long way from that. I think, you know, New York still has to take care of business in Houston. They kind of left them off the hook. And that's going to be an issue there. But the Galaxy have to feel confident they can advance against Salt Lake. They're going to have to almost play things backward because they had an experience last year against the San Jose Earthquakes where they were able to come back 1-0 and rebound. But this year they're going to in a kind of a similar situation, albeit flipped, against Salt Lake. So I think that they have to feel like they can hold that result and get the victory. But, yeah, you know, I think people want to see that New York versus L.A. matchup. We got a little bit of a taste of that a couple of years ago in the wild card match, but this would be, might be for all the marbles. We'll see what happens, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're probably keeping an eye on the other matchup. That Seattle-Portland matchup has been really, really good in that first leg. It ended 2-1 for Portland over at CenturyLink Field. Do you have a preference of who, if the Galaxy do win that second leg against Salt Lake at Rio Tinto, do you have a preference of who do you want to play in the other matchup?
I mean, they're both fantastic teams. They're both teams that are exciting teams. I think that the Galaxy, they haven't had success yet this season against the Portland Timbers. They've only gotten 1 point in 3 games, so that's certainly an issue for them there. But I know this team, and I know that they'd like to, you know, get results against teams they hadn't had results against before. So, I mean, there's always that aspect with Portland. So I think they'd like to maybe knock them out, beat them. But, you know, Seattle is always an interesting team. They're always an exciting team to play against. They have Clint Dempsey, Obafemi Martin, so much talent. So I feel like the Galaxy really, not so much the Galaxy, but fans really can't lose when it comes to these games. So I think they would both be pretty exciting.
I guess the question I have for you is this. Obviously, Tim Leiwicki is no longer with the Galaxy and AEG management. He's over in Toronto right now with TFC trying to fix the problems they have over there. In the front office, are they still not missing a step with how the Galaxy are doing? Or do you feel that maybe this is how can I put this? I don't want to make it sound terrible or anything like that. But do you feel confident with the Galaxy front office being as good as it ever has been with Leiwicki no longer there?
Yeah, you know, that's always a loss. But in the business world, you're going to see people move. They're going to fluctuate. They're going to find different locations. So I think that that is something that they've dealt with, but they have a guy in Dan Beckerman who's a new AEG president, who's somebody who's been around there. He's kind of a little bit of an understated guy as opposed to a Tim Leiwicki, but this is a team that just locked down Landon Donovan. They locked down Omar Gonzalez. They have a 2-year contract for Robbie Keane. I think that they know how to manage this team. You know, allocation money is huge to keeping this group together. I think that's going to be an issue. You know, they have to find a way to win this trophy. But I feel like they're confident, they know what to do, and they're able to succeed.
All right. Well, listen, good luck in the second leg over at Rio Tinto Stadium. That'll be on Thursday night, I believe on ESPN2, the big matchup against Real Salt Lake and Jason Kreis, as well as Alvaro Saborillo. Adam, I'll talk to you next time. Good luck on Thursday night, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, that's Adam Serrano, the LA Galaxy Insider, talking everything with the LA Galaxy going on. And don't forget, of course, the LA Galaxy, not just in the MLS Cup playoffs, but also CONCACAF Champions League knockout stage, as they will be facing Club Tijuana in the quarterfinals against that Mexican side in the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals and the knockout stages. So as we keep on rolling here on the 40 Cents Fire Internet Soccer Show, and once again, this is episode number 169, we're going to have on very soon Mr. Steven Leonard, of course, also known as Nevitz, as we get set to talk about, I would have to say, a big win. I would have to say it was a very big win for the Timbers. Not saying, you know, Cascadia Cup rivals are, you know, they're a piece of cake. There's no way they're a piece of cake at all. These are really rough and tough games that are just big time up there, along with Vancouver, the Whitecaps, the Timbers, the Sounders. These are big, big games that everyone is up for. And I'll tell you, it's going to be interesting to see what will happen here as the second leg will be over in Portland at Jeld-Wen Field. But let me tell you, for the Timbers, they've gotten some draws. I don't know if they've gotten a lot of wins over at CenturyLink Field, but boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, getting a 2-1 victory at the Sounders' home is probably a big task. That was done very well from Portland. They got the first two goals of the match, and then they let that one slip to make it 2-1. But once again, you got to say for the Timbers, they did what they had to do. They got a result that they needed. Even though Seattle was able to get that one
even
goal Lahart, back.
Please leave a detail.
And right now we're waiting for Mr. Lenhart to call in and talk about what's been going on with the Timbers at the moment. Not available for us, but we will try again. As once again, it's going to be a big second leg for the Timbers when they're home against Seattle. And that once again, these Cascadia matches during the regular season, big, and now they've moved into the playoffs in the MLS. So once again, big time coming in Major League Soccer. So as we get set here, let's go ahead and talk about that matchup, actually, as we take a look over here and as we see what did happen with the Seattle did well against Colorado in the one-and-done, beating them by a final of 2-0. But here come the Timbers over at Jeld-Wen Field. And boy, oh boy, what a goal from Ryan Johnson in the 15th minute. I mean, you're talking about a great cross from Jewsbury, and it goes right off the head of Ryan Johnson to make it 1-0. And, you know, you thought maybe Seattle was going to be, you know, not doing so well there. But then again, you know, they held them off till half, got into the second half. Seattle was pressing a little bit. They were attacking. They were doing well. The Timbers handled the pressure very, very well right now. The Timbers did handle the pressure well. And then they went on and they got a second goal from Darlington Nagbe, found a way to go through the defense.
Yeah, it's Stephen Lenhart.
And once again, we don't have Mr. Lenhart. We have his voicemail. But a great, great rip from Darlington Nagbe in the 67th minute, assisted by Khalif Al-Hassan. And boy, oh boy, you guys say that was a big, big, big goal for Portland, and they had 2-0 on the score sheet. And then when you get to second half stoppage time, you had a feeling that the Sounders really, really needed to get a goal here just to remain alive on the aggregate, because when you go into Portland, you're adding on some goals here, and you know, you got to say to yourself, for, you know, if you're a Sounders fan, you needed something. You needed something positive to move into that second leg over in Portland. And once again, old reliable Oswald Alonso, the Cuban defector who's trying, I believe he has citizenship already with the U.S. In this country. And you just got to say, for Alonso, Ozzie Alonso, that shot from distance, big rebound shot from distance, made it 2-1. And even though it was a loss, it was not a complete loss for the Sounders. That's for sure. It was not a complete loss for the Sounders because they got that goal. They pulled one back. They were able to remain alive on the aggregate. Obviously, they still had enough time to try and equalize. It didn't happen at all, but now they have a goal to their name. It's on the score sheet. Now they go into Jeld-Wen Field, and they are going to try. You know, a win, a one-goal win, obviously puts them into extra time. A two-goal win would give them the lead on aggregate. And obviously, you've seen gelled Winfield. For other visitors, you know, it's a tough place to get results from against a good home side like the Timbers. But the Sounders have been there before, whether it be USL games, games after moving up to MLS, the Timbers now coming into MLS, the Sounders and the Timbers fighting, scratching, clawing, everything to get this stuff done. And you know what? It's just been really amazing to see what's been happening with the Timbers and the Sounders when they get together. I'll be honest with you. I think it is exciting. Look, I understand how some of you guys are thinking, but you got to be honest here. These are exciting games, and now they're one-upping each other because the only time these guys will probably get together in the Open Cup will probably be later on in the probably be somewhere maybe in the later rounds, like maybe the quarterfinals, the semifinals, maybe the round of 16, depending on how many lower level sides are remaining in the Open Cup tournaments. Looks like we're probably not going to get Stephen Leonard Hahn. Looks like he's been detained or something has happened. Maybe a family emergency, we don't know, but hopefully he'll be okay, and we'll have him on next time when we discuss the second legs of these MLS Cup playoffs. But once again, this has been exciting. This has been fun. This has been awesome to see when you have these teams that face each other in the playoffs, and like they've always faced each other in the regular season, these matchups. It's been fun. It's been exciting. It's been fantastic. I have to admit it. They're exciting to watch whenever they're on NBC Sports Network, NBC, or on ESPN or ESPN2. I enjoy watching these games, and these games have been a lot of fun. They really have been. And you see the best out of these two teams, including the Vancouver Whitecaps when they come and play against either Seattle or Portland. And you still remember that big 2-2 draw between Vancouver and Seattle on that big, big goal. I know who I'm thinking about. Unfortunately, I forgot his name. I'm going to go to the MLS website to take a look again because I know I forgot his name, unfortunately, and that's my bad. But I know he's on Toronto. So just have to take a look again. But you guys know what I'm talking about. These guys have been fantastic. These guys have been strong, and these guys have been awesome, you know? I mean, it's the truth. These guys have been fantastic together. And it looks like he's no longer in Eric Hassley, that's who it is, Eric Hassley. It looks like he's no longer in MLS. Shame. Good guy. I thought, you know, I went to from Vancouver to Toronto. I don't know if he's back in Vancouver or not, but we'll just see if he's still in the league. But once again, these are the big games, boy. These are the big games that really these are the big games that you watch. You want to see it happen. These are the big games you want to see happen. These are the big games that you would like to see happen. And once again, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. And as we keep on moving here, who do you want to see? Who do you want to see as we keep on going here? That's right. He's with FC Dallas. That's right. I forgot Eric Hosley is with FC Dallas this year. That was my bad. This is what happens when you forget about certain players that are no longer on certain teams. But, boy, I'll tell you. You know, big time stuff here, big time action. These are the games that you really, really want to be a part of. These are the games that you want to see happen. And who would you like to see after Portland and Seattle call it quits? What would you like to see after L.A. and Salt Lake call it quits? Not saying, you know, both sides are going to be, you know, it's over or whatever it is like that, but you want to see basically these teams in either playoff matchups, who's going to advance and go to that goal aggregate conference final round. Who do you want to see? Do you want to see Portland, L.A., Salt Lake, Seattle, Seattle, L.A., Portland, Salt Lake, again, because they were in the Open Cup semifinals this past tournament? You know, there's a lot of questions you got to ask. A lot of questions you need to ask about that one. So we'll have to wait and see how the situation is and what goes on here, because I'll tell you right now, we're going to see some fantastic stuff going on here tomorrow night in the Eastern Conference and Thursday night in the Western Conference. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. I know it will be. I cannot wait. We'll give you the playoff schedule right now if you want, because, boy, oh, boy, I'll tell you, it's going to be exciting once again. I cannot wait. And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, the second legs of the MLS Cup playoffs, the quarterfinals, or if you wish, the conference semifinals second leg in the Eastern Conference. At 8 o'clock Eastern, the New York Red Bulls hosting the Houston Dynamo. Locally in New York, you can see it on MSG Network. Locally in Houston, it'll be on Comcast Sportsnet Houston. Nationwide in Canada, RDS2. Nationwide in the United States, Univision Deportes. And, of course, in English, MLS Live on your laptops and computers and handheld devices. Also on MLS Live nationally, Sporting Kansas City will be hosting the New England Revolution. That's at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. Comcast Sportsnet New England Alternative on the Revolution local. And KSMO with Kansas City, Kansas, as well as Kansas City, Missouri. Thursday, November the 7th. The Western Conference second legs will be going on. It will be at Rio Tinto Stadium on Thursday, November the 7th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Mountain. Salt Lake again hosting the LA Galaxy. That will be seen nationwide on ESPN2 as well as nationwide in Canada on TSN2. And then we're going to have the Portland Timbers hosting the Seattle Sounders on NBC Sports Network across the United States, TSN2 across Canada, and Univision Deportes. That'll be at 11 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Pacific. And now we have the dates for the conference finals or the MLS Cup semifinal first and second legs, as we'll read it off to you right now. On Saturday, November the 9th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, if the Red Bulls win this, they will be on the road at either Sporting Kansas City or New England Revolution. It will be seen on NBC National across the country Saturday, November the 9th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. On Sunday, November the 10th, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, ESPN, ESPN3, and on ESPN Deportes, the Western Conference final first leg will be there. And then, after all the international games, after all the friendlies, the final playoff matches for World Cup qualifying, on Saturday, November the 23rd, the second leg of the Eastern Conference Final will be at either Red Bull Arena or Sporting Kansas City. We'll see what happens. Be seen nationally on NBC Sports Network at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, TSN2 across Canada nationally, RDS2 in Quebec Province, Univision Deportes, and then, of course, on Sunday, November the 24th, the Western Conference second leg final, 9 o'clock Eastern Time on Sunday, November 24th, ESPN Deportes, RDS, and I believe also ESPN will be there too. So we'll see what happens. So there is the scheduling. Should be exciting. Should be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. Cup playoffs first leg wrapped up right there for you. Now let's move on here to the final regular season wrap-up in the final week of the fall season schedule here in the North American Soccer League. Now, we already know that the New York Cosmos have already won the fall season schedule. They've already got their shield, the signification, the clarification. They've won the fall season scheduling. But the entire season did not come to an end until this past weekend. Let's go right now to the final weekend of the fall schedule, the North American Soccer League. And here you go, the Atlanta Silverbacks and hosting the New York Cosmos. It was a 1-0 victory for the reserves of the Cosmos over the reserves of the Atlanta Silverbacks. The only goal of the game was by the Cosmos, Mr. Lopez, in the 34th minute, assisted by Vetter. That is all that was needed. Any yellow card accumulation is probably canceled. Will not carry over into the Soccer Bowl Championship. So final score here, Atlanta 0, New York Cosmos 1. As we go on to the other matches, the Carolina Railhawks finishing up with a 2-1 victory over the San Antonio Scorpions at Wake Med Soccer Park. And with this final result, the Railhawks do win the Woosman Cup with the most points combined in both the spring and fall seasons. So congratulations to the Railhawks as they get the Woosman Cup. Congratulations. Here's how it went down. Torre in the 27th minute put San Antonio ahead 1-0, but then it was Brian Shriver who came in, got a penalty in the 68th minute, converted it to equalize at 1-1. And then Shriver with the winner to make it 2-1 as the Railhawks officially defeat the San Antonio Scorpions at Wake Med Soccer Park. Final score, Carolina, San Antonio 1. The next matchup, of course, Fort Lauderdale Strikers with a 1-1 draw against the FC Edmonton over at Lockhart Stadium. Final score there, 1-1 once again. Goal scorers, it was Salazar in the 8th minute with the early goal for Fort Lauderdale, went into that score at half. Late in the second half, Mirabelli equalizes for Edmonton, and the final there is 1-1. So once again, it's Fort Lauderdale 1, FC Edmonton 1 to finish up the season for both teams. And how about this? What in the world is going on when Minnesota and Tampa Bay get together? Fireworks, explosions, unbelievable. It was a road victory as the Minnesota United FC defeat the Tampa Bay Rowdies by a final of 6-4. 6-4, what is going on here? Franks gets the first goal for Minnesota in the 10th minute. Then Daly makes it 2-0 in the 17th. But then in the second half, Luke Mulholland on a penalty converts to make it 2-1. Pulls one back for Tampa Bay, and then Daly with the second of the match to make it 3-1. Pichkolin pulls another one back to make it 3-2. Pablo Campos makes it 4-2 in the 71st minute. Daly gets his hat trick to make it 5-2. Eric Frimpong makes it 5-3, pulls another one back, and then you got Pablo Campos who gets his second of the match to make it 6-3. And then Eric Frimpong, once again, makes it 6-4 for Minnesota. Frimpong gets his second of the match. At the end of the day, it's been a real roller coaster ride here in the North American Soccer League. As this has been, you know, I have to say this, and I really, really have to say this. I think this has been a great, not so much an example, but a great test to see what's been going on here in the North American Soccer League. It's been an absolute awesome time to see them make this bold move to, instead of having a full season, to go with half seasons, a spring season, a fall season. I will admit I don't like to see 10 games in the spring season, take a World Cup break, and then move a bigger season in the spring. I mean, in the fall. I think I screwed that up anyway. 10-game spring season for next year and then a bigger fall season for next season. I think that's wrong, but then again, this is what the Board of Governors did with the NESL. There's nothing you can do about it. I agree, though, with many people are saying that this should never have happened, but it did, unfortunately, and I'll agree with them that it was the wrong thing to do. But once again, this has been a very good experiment for what normally happens down in from Mexico all the way into South America. I really think this was a pretty darn good experiment. And who knows, maybe Major League Soccer will take heed of it, maybe they'll do something with it, or maybe we just remain the way it is. So we'll see what happens. But final score, Tampa Bay 4, Minnesota United 6, and Minnesota ends it on a good note for their fall season in the NASL. So as we get over here to the standings, the final standings for the fall season, here's how it is. Once again, the New York Cosmos winning the fall season with 31 points, 9 wins, 4 draws and a loss, scoring 22, allowing 12. Carolina Railhawks in second place with 23 points, 7 wins, 2 draws, 5 losses, 21 goals for, 16 against. Tampa Bay tied with Minnesota United with 20 points, but better goal differential on a plus 3. Their record is 5 wins, 5 draws, 4 losses, 30 scored, 27 against. Minnesota United, 6 wins, 2 draws, 6 losses. They've scored 21, allowed 19. In fifth place, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. 5 wins, 3 draws, 6 losses with a minus 2 on the differential with 18 points, scoring 18 and allowing 20. FC Edmonton and the Atlanta Silverbacks are tied with 16 points for sixth place, but Edmonton with the better differential at a minus 1. FC Edmonton, 3 wins, 7 draws, 4 losses for scoring 13 and allowing 14. Atlanta in the fall season, 4 wins, 4 draws, 6 losses, scoring 14, allowing 22. They are at a minus 8 on the differential. And in dead last, unfortunately, for the San Antonio Scorpions, after a very good rookie season last year, an interesting spring, but a very terrible fall. 3 wins, a draw, and 10 losses, scoring 15 and allowing 24. With a minus 9, they finished the season in the fall season with 10 points. And for the Cosmos and the Railhawks, great home records. Cosmos 5-2 at home. Railhawks are 6-1 at home. On the road, Cosmos not bad. I think they're probably, shall I say, 5 wins, 2 draws at home for the Cosmos. 4 wins, 2 draws on the road for the Cosmos. That's not bad. Not bad at all. Minnesota, 4 wins, no draws, and 3 losses on the road. But you got to say the 2 draws do help out the Cosmos more, with Minnesota United losing 2 more than the Cosmos. So very, very tough. Don't forget now, as we head back to the schedule, the NASL Soccer Bowl Final. The Soccer Bowl Final will be down at Silverbacks Park and out around the Atlanta area. They will be Atlanta Silverbacks winning the spring season. They host the Soccer Bowl against the New York Cosmos. That will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can watch this match on Saturday, November the 9th, live on ESPN3.com or watchESPN.com. It's exciting. It's going to be fantastic. Also on ESPN Deportes. I'm assuming the NASL will have a regulation. They'll have their Ustream camera there as well. But once again, everyone, if you want to watch any past matches, go to their Ustream account and watch past matches. NASL.com/Ustream. Also, check out their Soccer Bowl website, NASLsoccerbowl.com. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. I cannot wait for this. It's going to be wonderful, and I am so excited to see what's going to happen. Will the Atlanta Silverbacks win their first ever Soccer Bowl, or will the New York Cosmos win their first Soccer Bowl championship in the new NASL? While it's nice to see the Cosmos showing their old and original Soccer Bowl trophies, we have to be honest that the new Soccer Bowl trophy, it's a brand new trophy. While technically it could be their fifth Soccer Bowl championship, the truth is it's a brand new era. This is not the same team from those days. There's been a major separation. I know there are some Cosmos fans that will argue that it's a continuation. You know, I want to be truthful about this, and in your hearts I can understand that. And for those who are Cosmos fans that are saying it's a continuation, that's fine. If that's what you want to say, that's up to you. You go ahead. Go ahead and say how you feel. And we're talking about these original Cosmos fans that started back in the original NASL days, not what's going on now. And you have to be truthful and you have to be honest, because the truth is that this is a brand new era. This is a different Cosmos team. These players did not come from the Cosmos Academy. These players did not come from those days all the way back in the NASL, the original NASL days. I'm happy the Cosmos name is back. I'm happy that the Cosmos name has returned. But the truth is that this is not a continuation. It's a second chapter. That's how I feel. And I have to be honest. This is not having a go. This is not saying, you know, it's a lie, it's this or that. No. This is a brand new era of the NASL. You are in the second division. And I understand what some of them are probably going to say, but the truth of the matter is this. It is a second, it's a new edition of the Cosmos. I'm happy the name is back. I'm happy that Legendary Shield is back. But once again, this is not the Pele Cosmos. This is not the Canalia Cosmos. This is not the Birkenmeyer Cosmos or the Escuderian Cosmos or even the Beckenbauer Cosmos. This is a brand new side. And if there is any form of continuation, I'm sorry, I have to apologize. I just don't see it. This is not a continuation. But that does not mean that you have to think winning the fall championship is anything to sneeze at. No, it's not. That's a big championship to win the season, to win the fall season. Congratulations to the Cosmos winning the fall season of 2013. And to be honest, let's see what they can do in this Soccer Bowl, and then we'll see what they can do afterwards in the 2014 season. But once again, this is what we got. This is what has to happen. And you just have to say that it's a lot of fun to see the return, the real return of the New York Cosmos. And I'm happy they're back. We'll see what happens down the road in the future. But for now, just be happy they're back and that name has returned. That's all I'm saying. Just be happy that name returned and it's playing again, led by a very, very historical goal scorer in this area in Giovanni Savarese. I give him a lot of respect and a lot of you know, good jobs here and there, because he did do a fantastic job. excuse me, bringing back the name of the Cosmos. But once again, great job. Watch the Soccer Bowl final Saturday night, November the 9th, on ESPN3.com or the Watch ESPN, as well as the app. It should be exciting. It should be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. to see who will emerge victorious in the third NASL Soccer Bowl final. It's not two legs. It's one big final down at Atlanta Silverbacks Park in the Atlanta, Georgia area. It's going to be a lot of fun. And now we get to the Red Bull Hour. And you have to say that I have to say I'm not that disappointed with the result. I am not at all disappointed in the result, because you want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because you felt this season down at BBVA Compass Stadium, you knew that there was going to be some problems. You knew Houston was not going to lie down and die. That's for sure.
You knew for a fact that the Dynamo were looking for revenge. You knew for a fact that the Dynamo were going to try to get on the score sheet quickly as possible. Did it happen in the first 45 minutes? Absolutely not. The Red Bulls dominated the first 45 minutes. The Red Bulls dominated that first half like the Supporters' Shield victors that they are. They dominated that first half like it was just another day at the office. Great, great cross from Thierry Henry to Tim Cahill, a leaping header past Tally Hall to make it 1-0 in the 22nd minute. And then 10 minutes later, great link-ups with Dax McCarty, Tim Cahill, and then Eric Alexander, who did his own version of the Lloyd Sam chop, attacking the net, cutting to his left, going a little to the right, scoring that goal with that right foot. And it was 2-0 Red Bulls. You felt good going at half, up 2-0. You're saying to yourself, there's a possibility that the Red Bulls could steal a victory again down at BBVA Compass Stadium. That, unfortunately, did not happen. 6 minutes into the after the start of the second half, 6 minutes into the second half, David Carney, and while I understand he wanted to clear that ball as quickly as possible outside the Red Bull area to try and send it down deep down the field back to the Dynamo side of things, you have to say he rushed it. David Carney rushing his clearance and sadly shanking it to the one guy you don't want to have the ball at his feet. And I'm not talking about a forward. I'm not talking about a defenseman. I'm talking about a guy in Ricardo Clark who used to be drafted by this Red Bull / Metro Stars team, because if you remember what Rico can do, Rico can blast that ball with accuracy straight at the net. You remember when he was out for the entire, I think it was the 2004 season, I think it was the second season with Bob Bradley at the helm of the Metro Stars back in those days? You remember the final game against DC United down at RFK. And what did Rico do? He leveled the match at one with a rip from 30 to 31 yards out. He ripped that ball, and then all of a sudden, it was 2-1 Red Bulls.
It was 2-1 Red Bulls, and of course, I know what everyone was thinking. Here we go again. Has that terminology returned? Has that terminology come back? to start haunting us now after finally winning the Supporter Shield? Do we say those words? Do we say the term that has scared the crap out of every single supporter that has followed this side since 1996? Right now, I would have to say no. Right now, I would have to say hold back. Because here's the thing. They have done well at Red Bull Arena. How many times have you seen this side down a goal or two and then on the comeback trail, pulling out last-minute draws, last-minute wins? And I understand the playoff record is not that great. 0-3. You lose to San Jose in the second leg of the 2010 playoffs. You lose in the first leg to the Galaxy in the 2011 playoffs. We already know what happened with the Kenny Cooper penalty kick situation. We all know what happened there. We don't have to rehash it. But we all know that there are those unsettling moments that could happen in this second leg tomorrow night. But just to continue about that first leg, Jaimison Olave. Some have said correct decision by Salazar, Ricardo Salazar showing him straight red. Many have said stupid tackle, but the way he tackled him, it was more of a yellow than a red. How did I view it? Is it a true scissors challenge from behind? Did Jaimison Olave swing his left leg all the way around to trap and tackle down Omar Cummings? My answer to that is no. Did he slide tackle him to get the ball? Yes. Was it a little clumsy? Yes. I'll admit to that. It was a clumsy challenge. But was it a red cardable offense? And that is that's the great debate that we're going to have. That is the great debate we're having right now. If you listen to the other podcasts and shows that are dedicated to the New York Red Bulls, is this a red cardable offense? To be honest with you, my personal view of it, I don't believe so. I believe it's a yellow card. It was a reckless challenge, yellow at best. Some could say borderline red, and if that's their opinion, that's their opinion. But once again, in my eyes, I think that's a yellow card challenge. And then, of course, you're down to 10 men for the rest of the second half. They're playing some pretty good defense, stoppage time, and that's when you really have to be careful when you get to stoppage time. Because the Houston Dynamo have been known to pull out big-time equalizers or match winners when their backs are against the wall, especially at home. And what happened on a corner kick in the second minute of four? Good try by Luis Robles to try to knock the ball away from the Dynamo. Unfortunately, he didn't parry it tightly enough around the near post and out. Omar Cummings, his toe was right there, and he just punched it past Robles. Some are saying maybe Robles was interfered with. I will disagree on that. Robles was not interfered with. Robles actually made a damn good save. It's just the sad thing is the rebound went towards Cummings, and Omar just poked it in. We're done. It's 2-2. On the aggregate, no away goals rule. But if you think about it, and this is interesting, and here's the interesting thing. What if the MLS Cup playoffs did add away goals? Then you'd say the Red Bulls have an advantage. Then you say the Red Bulls, all they need is a nil-nil draw or at least get a goal to make it 3-2, and you'd still have an advantage on the away goals. Red Bulls make it 4-2 on aggregate, and they'd still have the advantage on the away goals. So I don't know if they're going to bring in away goals rule in the MLS Cup playoffs. It would be interesting. It really would be interesting if it did happen. But right now, it's a 2-2 draw. Once again, goals by the New York Red Bulls in the 22nd minute by Tim Cahill, 32nd minute by Eric Alexander. Houston Dynamo, goals by Ricardo Clark in the 51st minute. Omar Cummings in added time, the 92nd minute. It's 2-2. Yellow card accumulation right now. Those in jeopardy from the Houston Dynamo. Oscar Boniek Garcia is the only Dynamo player in yellow card jeopardy. For the Red Bulls, it's David Carney. Why he got booked, I have still no clue why he got booked. I don't know the reason for it. Very strange stuff, I don't know. Thierry Henry, and his booking is questionable. If you want to rescind a yellow card, if you really want to rescind a yellow card, it's on that. How do you give a booking on a 50-50 ball? How do you give a booking on a 50-50 challenge? Seriously. How is that even possible? How the heck is that possible to give a yellow card on a 50-50 challenge? I mean, let's be honest. Henry, he jumped in the air, and when he realized that he couldn't get to the ball, he tried to shy away from Hall, and his head hits the ball because Tally Hall handled the ball, and Tally Hall, of course, made a meal of it and falls backwards. That's a 50-50 challenge. Why Henry was booked for it, I don't know. I mean, in all honesty, I believe MLS should rescind that yellow card on Henry. Johnny Steele is also booked in the first leg, and so is Brandon Barklage. So basically, two yellows that should be two yellows that are questionable, a red that's questionable should have been a yellow, and two other yellows on the Red Bulls that were well-deserved. And that's the truth. And once again, this is all going to be on the line tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern, locally on MSG Network. And you know what? It's been pretty darn good with the coverage. And once again, it will be, if they do win this second leg against Houston, they will be on the road in the first leg on Saturday, November the 9th, on the road in the afternoon on NBC against either Kansas City or New England. And then you got to wait for at least 2 weeks at Red Bull Arena on a Saturday night on November the 23rd. As they will be hosting the second leg if they do defeat the Houston Dynamo tomorrow night. Let's reassess the situation once again. Has the term returned after finally winning the Supporter Shield, a legitimate trophy of winning the regular season? Yes, I said it, a legitimate trophy. They're going to the CONCACAF Champions League. No doubt about that. Finally getting their first trophy in 18 years. Now they have to go forward, have a better result at home, win the result, and get ready for hopefully a short road trip to Foxborough or a possible halfway trip across the country to our heartland against KC. We shall see what happens. We shall see what the situation is going to be. But I have to say, this is going to be exciting. This is going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. Let's turn our attentions to something else here. Now, I want to talk to Houston Dynamo supporters here, if you are listening to the show. I am not going to paint you guys with a broad brush because I know for a fact the majority of Dynamo supporters are good people. I know that the majority of Houston Dynamo supporters are very passionate. You love your team. You back them up to the hilt. You do a great job supporting your side. But the few, the group that had the nerve to go out and rob Red Bull fans, not just Red Bull fans, but family and friends of Red Bull player Michael Bustamante. That was despicable. That was absolutely despicable. You feel like you've done something great? You feel like you've done something wonderful? You feel like that, oh, I'm going to rob some Red Bull fans, and I don't care because, you know, we got to teach them a lesson. You can't come in our house for a third time and try and take another win. You know what that makes you? It makes you a bunch of fools. It makes you a bunch of jerks. I may rib Warren Jones. Of course, I follow Brian Zygo on Twitter. These are the two guys. And I know there's another guy on Twitter I follow, too, that's also a Dynamo fan. These are good guys. These guys don't need you to basically ruin their reputation as Houston Dynamo supporters. They don't need you to ruin their good names. And every other innocent Dynamo fan supporter at BBVA Compass Stadium. These guys and every other Houston Dynamo fan are good guys. How dare you steal from the family of Michael Bustamante? How dare you steal from the friends of Michael Bustamante? How dare you? You know what kind of lowlifes you are? You're just a bunch of thugs. And it's a shame. It's really a shame that the good fans in Houston, and in my opinion, I think Houston Dynamo supporters are one of the good guys. You are one of the good guys. I believe that Houston Dynamo fans are on the same level as Red Bull supporters, as DC supporters, because you guys do a great job. But those few have the nerve to ruin that reputation. Here's what I'm asking from Dynamo supporters. If you know the people that did this, if you know the people who intentionally robbed Michael Bustamante's friends and family, I want you to go to the front office, to Chris Canetti at the Dynamo. I want you to contact the Houston police. I want you to rat them out and you know, make them pay. Make them pay for the terrible thing he did. I want you to make them pay for the terrible things that they did. Because that's not who Houston Dynamo supporters are. I am, you know, offended. I am offended for what just happened after the match on Sunday. Robbed outside BBVA Compass Stadium. And, you know, let me say this as well, because I can, because I have a show. I'm going to say this as well. Do you know how much crap this sport gets when it comes to stealing and hooliganism. Do you understand why we hope this stuff never happens? Now, I don't want to paint a broad brush down South America, but the truth is this. There's pitch invasions. There's a lot of crap going on. I have a friend who is from Uruguay. He's told me a lot of stuff, and let me tell you something right now. He didn't tell me this just to scare the crap out of me. I believed him. Because there are people down there, if you are rooting for the other side or you're a stranger just there for the day, they will try something on you. And, of course, you don't know if the gun's loaded or not. And this is what I'm talking about. Theft, stealing, hooliganism, you know. And it doesn't have to be a guy. It could also be a girl. They have the balls to do it. They'll do it. And what you guys in Houston did was a step in the wrong direction. And you know what? We don't need this in the American soccer community. We need to be better than this. What's going to happen now? We're going to have security detail for visiting supporters or people who are not part of visiting supporters, but they're visiting the stadium to see their team play. And this stuff has to happen. This is where I am very upset and disgusted in what I've heard. And if you are listening to this show and you're the ones that did this, contact the Dynamo, be a man, and say, it was me, I apologize, I should never have done this with my friends, and here are the items that I stole from the Bustamante family and or the friends of Michael Bustamante. Because we cannot tolerate this. We want no hooliganism, no theft, nothing that sharpens the fingers of blame for the mainstream sports media to try and paint another dark light on this sport. It's a shame that they still do it. It's a shame. But you know what? We have to prove that we're better than this. So that's why I'm saying what I'm saying now. Whoever did it, admit it, return the stuff to the Dynamo front office, have it mailed to the Bustamante family, and just admit what you did was wrong. Just admit what you did was wrong. And never, ever do it again. Are you going to face some jail time? You probably might. You probably might have to. But be a stand-up person and be a stand-up guy. Don't be a coward. Don't glorify into stealing stuff from those that came down to see their favorite player or their son play a road game in your city, in your stadium. How about that? Let's move on here. We got some time left here in the Red Bull section. You know, I was on the Red Bull Rant podcast with Jason Iapico, that was Truman and Patrick McDonald. And I did predict a draw. I didn't say a 1-1 or a 2-2 or a 0-0. I just said, you know what, I'm going to predict a draw. Because you want to know why? Because I didn't think they were going to get the win. Now, don't get me wrong. It looked great at halftime. It really, really looked great at halftime, seeing them up 2-0. But the truth is, I had a feeling the Dynamo were not going to go away quietly in that game. And I was right. Obviously, David Carney helped out a little bit by accident because he crossed that ball when he shouldn't have. Obviously, some are thinking, well, now that Olave is suspended for this game, that it's all over. But you know what? Ibrahim Sagaya and Marcus Holgersen actually did well as a center-back tandem when Olave was not playing due to the fear of CenturyLink field turf. I know, it's an allergy. I don't know why. But the point is this. The Dynamo, whether they got the help from Carney or not, they were going to score a goal anyway, and they were going to make the aggregate interesting. And even though we're 0-0, technically, second leg, and the Red Bulls are home, and I understand they are 0-3 at home in the playoffs in the last three seasons, the Red Bulls have found ways to come back and get late-minute results. And if we're going to be going into extra time and penalties, we will be going into extra time and penalties. If the Red Bulls do dominate at home like they have this entire season, then the Red Bulls will be advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals, the MLS Cup first leg semifinals, and all this worry will be for naught. But I will say this. This is going to be, right now, the biggest game in the Red Bull season at the moment. They dominate this. Two more matches. If they do advance after those two, the MLS Cup championship game will be held at Red Bull Arena in December. So as we are ready to go for the home leg, just have to say right now, I do feel confident in what the Red Bulls can accomplish. I do feel confident that the Red Bulls will get a victory at home. It all depends on what's going to happen on the field. It all depends on keeping your emotions in check and making sure that what you do on the field is the right thing to do. Make a solid decision on a tackle. Make a solid decision on stripping the ball. Make a solid decision in scoring a goal. Make a solid decision on a cross to set up a goal. There's going to be possibly penalty hunting on both sides here. And the referee for this second leg is Silviu Petrescu from Canada, from the CSA. I know what everyone is saying. We remember what happened against Salt Lake. Basically, all three penalties, two for the Red Bulls and one for Salt Lake, were not penalties. Do not allow Petrescu to influence the match. Let him make the foul calls. Make sure they're not terrible foul calls. Keep the cards in his pocket and just let him handle Houston. Do not give him the excuse of throwing people out, booking you to have you suspended for the first leg in the next round. And this is why I keep saying this all the time. It's not just the quality of the skill. It's not just the quality of the technical skill. This is also a mentality that these players must understand. Know your referee. Know your officiating crew. Don't allow what happened when Kenny Cooper converted a successful penalty but was forced to retake it because both Henri and Cahill encroached into the D.C. area last year at Red Bull Arena. Do not encroach. Do not give an opportunity for the referee to make another bad decision. Because if you allow the referees to get a handle on the game the wrong way, it's going to be catastrophe. It will be disastrous. Cannot allow this to happen. But once again, this is what we are all going to look at. And if this does happen, and the Red Bulls do the right things, and they move on into the Eastern Conference Final, this will be the third time in the club's history that they have gone past the first round in the MLS Cup playoffs. You remember the film. You remember the MLS Insider show. You remember what happened when Adolfo Valencia was called for offside and he was not offside. You remember what happened in the final in 2008. And, of course, you remember what happened last year with D.C. This is the time and this is the place to be ahead of Houston and to go out there and advance into the next round. It's very, very important that the Red Bulls make sure they keep themselves in check and calm. Just play your game. Don't overdo it. Don't put yourself in a situation you're going to be suspended. Put yourself in a situation where you're going to be in yellow card jeopardy. You've done this before at Red Bull Arena at home in the regular season. You have done this before. You have your backs to the wall. You've handled the pressure. Sometimes the pressure is probably not even on you, but you still put the pressure on yourselves. And you go out and you dominate and you do what you have done in this wild and wacky 2013 season. Heimensen Olave with a thrilling last second equalizer against the Columbus Crew to take a point away, or at least to take 2 points away from the Columbus Crew. Dax McCarty and the boys coming back against Salt Lake, being down 3-2, and then all of a sudden a gift penalty to Espíndola, who converted his second of the match to make it 3-3, and then the second half stoppage time goal by Dax McCarty to make it 4-3. And who can forget the Tim Cahill second half stoppage time winner against the New England Revolution, because without that equalizer and without that point, we wouldn't be talking about Supporters Shield champions now, would we? And as I've said before, like I said already, I predicted a draw in this first leg. It's not how I drew it up for the draw. It's not what I expected it to be the draw. The wackiness, the weirdness, the something screwy is going to happen. But I did predict a draw, and I think it's still in favor of the Red Bulls. Whether it's momentum or not, I don't know. But to be honest, I don't see momentum here. I see the Red Bulls coming back home, and I see the Red Bulls, I believe, getting the win, winning this match, advancing to the next round in the MLS Cup playoffs. Now, I just want to give you a scheduling update. Of course, tomorrow night is the match. I will be at Red Bull Arena. There will be no postgame. I will review the match on Thursday, November the 7th. And we'll also invite probably Mr. Sean Donahue to discuss the second leg of the Revolution Sporting Kansas City second leg matchup. If not him, then we'll bring over Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline, who covers them on his Down the Byline blog. And then we'll try and find a way to get some time for the Western Conference matches. Hopefully, maybe we'll talk, maybe we'll do a show on Saturday. If not, please join me on Friday. Please join me on Friday for Soccer Bowl, NASL Soccer Bowl final preview. Hopefully we'll have on the head coach of the New York Cosmos, Giovanni Savarese, and head coach of the Atlanta Silverbacks, and Brian Haynes, to talk about how their clubs got to where they did for this Soccer Bowl final. It should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. And don't forget, afterwards, next Tuesday, we will be doing a first leg semifinal review show for first leg conference final review show, however you want to say it. You know, let's be honest, I'd rather call it the MLS Cup playoffs, the MLS Cup semifinal first leg. That's how I see it. But once again, it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of excitement going on. And as everyone knows what's going to happen here in November, we got Mexico in the playoffs against New Zealand at the Azteca on Wednesday, November the 13th. That will be at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. It's live on ESPN in English, Univision, Unimas, and Univision Deportes, Spanish language. Don't forget as well, first legs on Friday the 15th in Europe for their playoffs for getting into the World Cup. Also, Jordan versus Uruguay in the other playoff, and the African Confederation, the second legs of their playoffs from Friday to Tuesday. And the friendlies, let's not forget the friendlies. Canada will be taking on the Czech Republic over in Prague in a friendly. That will be on Sportsnet all over Canada. And in the United States, the USA will be at Scotland in Hampden Park in Glasgow, and that will be seen live on ESPN2 as well as on Univision nationally in Spanish language. And then, of course, on Tuesday the 19th, the USA will be at Austria, and that will be seen on the NBC Sports Network. That will be at 2:45 p.m. Eastern time over in Vienna at the Ernst Happel Stadion. And then on Wednesday, November 20th, don't forget also Tuesday, November 19th, the rest of, the second leg of the European playoffs should be exciting, should be a lot of fun. And then on Wednesday, November 20th, New Zealand will host Mexico at the Westpac Stadium in the final playoff, and that can be seen live 1 o'clock in the morning on Unimas as well as Univision Deportes. So late night Tuesday, early morning Wednesday, 1 o'clock Eastern time, you'll be able to see Mexico take on New Zealand on the road. And then once again, the playoffs will continue the second leg on Saturday, November the 23rd. Eastern Conference second leg will be on NBC Sports Network, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And then the Western Conference winners will be the Western Conference second leg will be on Sunday, November the 24th. And then in December, on the first Saturday in December, 4 o'clock Eastern on ESPN, Unimas, TSN2, RDS2, the home team from the East will host the away team from the West, depending on what's going to happen. But definitely, if the Red Bulls do what they hope to do, then it will be at 4 o'clock Eastern at Red Bull Arena. It will be absolutely fantastic if the Red Bulls can pull it out and go to their second MLS Cup championship for the very first time. We'll see what happens here with the Red Bulls as they take on Houston. One match down, technically 4 to go, but to be honest, one match down, one more to go in this round. It's a lot of fun here. This has been exciting so far. Excuse me. This has been a lot of fun so far. It's been exciting. These playoffs have been entertaining so far. And you know what? I'm enjoying it. I really am. And I've said this many, many times. And once again, I am in favor, if it happens in the future, I am in favor if they do decide to go single table, no playoffs, pro rel, whatever, the whole shebang, changing it if it does happen. I am for it. If it does happen, I will not stand in the way. I will not. But the truth is this. I am happy with where we are right now. I'm happy where we are at the moment. Bring in the playoffs. I'm okay. If this is going to be the way it is forever and ever and ever and ever, once again, I will not stand in the way. Because why? Because I support a fully functional and a financial healthy Major League Soccer, an NASL, USL Pro League, PDL, NPSL, USASA, US Club Soccer, anything and everything that will keep the sport alive, afloat, and doing well. Cannot rush into this. Cannot rush into that mechanism right now. The sport is growing slowly, but the truth is that it needs to go at this pace. It needs to go at this pace before a move of this magnitude can be made. And once again, everyone has to be on board. And when we say everyone, we're talking about the owners of the clubs in all professional and amateur leagues. If no one is on board, we cannot force it down people's throats. And that's all I'm saying. I do want it. I would like to see it. But I'm not going to force it if it means financial suicide. And unless every single club within the pyramid has their own stadium, that they don't have to rent it from the owners, because if you can't control the financial revenues of said stadium, then what's the point of having it when teams are going to be out financially? I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Dan Kelly. I want to thank Sean Donahue. I want to thank Adam Serrano. Hopefully Stephen Lenart will be available the next time. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to my show tonight. Join me on Thursday for a special Red Bulls second leg review show. And as always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Please do so. Have a good night. Take care, everybody, and it's bye-bye for now. So long, everyone.